Welcome to KWC's The Hotspot.
I'm Chloe Michael.
And I'm Maya Manry.
Produced by the KAWC Student Newsroom, we look forward to bringing you news that matters to Yuma and La Paz counties.
This week, we unmask the humans behind a now popular word, neurodivergence. Neurodivergent humans might have trouble fitting in, finding friends, making eye contact, and more. It has become a big umbrella term for people whose brains function, learn, and process information differently from what's considered normal or neurotypical. What is difficult about this term is how it defines itself against typical or normal. In this week's hotspot, we dive into neurodivergence, normal and not so normal, and whatever else it means to be normal.
This week's student reporter, Maya Manry, speaks of Jack Spinato of 1 in 10 on the intersection of queerness and neurodivergence.
Being different can have a lot of, well, different meanings. You might not fit into the specific mold that society has cast you in. You might think differently than your peers. You might want to look different in the mirror. There's a lot that can make you different, and some of that different stuff might be the same. Jack Spinato is a satellite coordinator for 1 in 10, a queer youth organization focused on supporting the local queer community. Jack is also diagnosed with autism, ADHD, and OCD, explaining how their diagnoses has explained so much about their life.
When I got my diagnosis for being autistic and having ADHD, I really did a lot of reflecting, and I was really able to sit with myself and understand that the world was just not made for me. My brain is wired differently on a neurological level. There are things that I miss, social cues to now. You know, I do have to, like, as a child, I watched a lot of movies, a lot of TV shows, and because of that, that's where I learned my social cues. And I think that, I think that because of that, you know, there's, like I said it previously, it feels more often than not like there's this handbook to life that most people get who are neurotypical that I never got, and I've had to kind of learn how to navigate different social situations as I've gotten older, and even to now being almost 30, there are still social situations that I don't necessarily understand and have to learn. And I think that intersectionality comes with being so different and feeling so different and almost alien in a way. Sometimes it can feel like I'm just a vessel and I'm just here.
With their diagnosis, they found that they started to gravitate towards more alternative communities, which helped them flesh out their identity.
I do agree with that. I do think that that is true because when you are somebody who is queer, there's so much exploration that you're able to do so freely. And I think with that exploring of yourself, you're able to really, really find who you are. And I think that really is what steers people who are neurodivergent either towards that queer identity, because you are able to, how do I word this? It's like, when you have a community of people around you who are so accepting and safe, you tend to kind of break everything down within yourself, and you're able to really rebuild yourself as who you are. You know, I've had so much support over the years through my sexuality and my gender identity that it's really, really been, I just don't think that I could see myself not being in the queer community. I don't see myself not being in, like, alternative or punk.
And as they came to understand themselves better, they've also found people that they can relate to, a community just like them that welcomes them with open arms.
As somebody who grew up with autism, you kind of do feel that you have, like, everybody has this handbook that you don't have on how to be a human. And I feel like being that outcast or feeling that kind of outcast loneliness, you tend to steer to, like, subcultures, for example, like being alternative, tend to steer towards these subcultures and or identities that are very accepting of everybody and have very moral and ethic codes that you support as well. And I feel like because of the, like, queer community being so supportive and open and accepting, many people kind of steer towards that. And whether or not they do identify as queer in any way, I do think because of that acceptance and safety and community, people just kind of tend to steer that way anyway.
So no matter how different you may be, there's a community out there for you and people that will love you for all your different you. From the KAWC Student Newsroom, I'm Maya Manry.
In this week's flash interview, student reporter Maya Manry interviews the KAWC's newsroom's very own Cisco Stargazer on their life growing up neurodivergent and how some people might not realize that they also grew up neurodivergent.
1-2, student interview. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Cisco Stargazer.
The newsroom's very own. And to ask the big question, would you consider yourself under the umbrella term neurodivergent?
Yeah, I'd say so. Pretty much all my life, as far as I can recall, I've been neurodivergent, but I was not aware of it until adulthood, really.
Do you think some stuff that you might have did that could have been noticed as symptoms of being neurodivergent could have just been excused by you or people around you, your family, as just kid stuff? And how can that maybe influence future diagnoses?
Possibly. I think for me, so I'll mention first that I thought I had ADHD and that was it for quite a while. I didn't think autism was a possibility because, geez, it's hard to say now because I feel like it's so obvious, but in hindsight, I wasn't aware at first. And part of it was because I thought, well, I was socialized very differently. I was a lot more isolated than your average kid, and I thought anything that was weird of like, oh, not really understanding social cues, that's because, oh, you were a lot lonelier as a kid growing up. But, you know, I think about stuff that I would do as a kid. I would used to, for example, I would quite separate myself a lot from other children. I'd have recess, and every single recess break, without fail, I'd go on the swings, and I'd sing, different songs, and it would annoy the other kids, but that was just my thing, and I kept doing it, and I don't know. That's not necessarily a sign, but it stood out.
Do you think as terms evolve and ways to be diagnosed evolve that you can see more people be diagnosed with it?
Absolutely. And I do think there are a lot more people who fall under that umbrella now than they realize or we realize. I know so many people that haven't really seen any specialists because, you know, let's say they're around my age. So I'm almost 30. So a lot of people that grew up my age, they weren't seeing, let's say, pediatric psychiatrists. They weren't really getting evaluated in school. We weren't really as aware of it. We had a very limited understanding, I'd say, of what counts as autistic, for example, or even ADHD. And because of that, today, they're not really finding as much need, let's say, to go see a specialist. Some do, some don't. So it's so funny to say that I feel like I can clock a lot of people, but I get that sense sometimes with a lot of folks where I'm like, you're different like me. And yeah, a lot of time they say, oh, I suspect, or maybe they don't know. So as we become more and more aware, I do think that we will see a lot more folks getting the diagnoses that they might need. Some people actually find that they don't really need one, that they're fine. They're at peace with how they are, and that's fine enough because it does vary. It's a spectrum, and it varies quite a bit. Some folks need help, and that's why they seek a diagnosis. Other people don't. They manage just fine.
Thank you very much. Could you please reintroduce yourself?
I'm Cisco Stargazer from the KAWC Newsroom.
Thank you very much. In this week's Sound of the Week, student reporter Chloe Michael shares her experience with living with Tourette's syndrome.
If you ask everyone you know what the word normal means, you'll receive different answers. Some might define the word as a standard that needs to be reached, while others say it's what you're used to. It's not every day that somebody hears a person make repetitive sounds out of context, especially in public. Trust me, I don't want to make the sounds as much as you want to hear them. But after living with Tourette's for a while, I've gotten used to it. Wow. However, in other situations, it still becomes, wow, overwhelming. People are still naturally curious, and I get asked questions a lot like, does it hurt? No. Are you able to control it? Think of it like a sneeze. You can hold it in, but eventually it has to, wow, happen. Somebody once asked me if my tics go off in my sleep. I don't know. Do they?
Wow.
At the end of the day, I live a normal life.
I work, go to school, and I have friends who accept all the pieces that make me who I am. Maybe we shouldn't be asking what it means to be normal, but what it means to be human.
No.
From the KAWC Student Newsroom, I'm Chloe Michael.
Student reporter Chloe Michael spoke with the founder of Circle of Friends, Diana Flermont, about how something that started out as helping her son became something that left an impact on the community.
Have you ever found it difficult to find your place in the world? Like it's impossible to fit in? If the answer is yes, then you're not alone. Being human, it's in our nature to not only want, but to need to belong somewhere. According to the American Psychological Association, being accepted within a community is important to your mental health. Feelings of anxiety, grief, and depression can all tie back to feeling isolated, which could lead to harmful behaviors for anyone who is struggling to meet their social needs. Founder of Circle of Friends, Diana Flermon, understood this feeling all too well. Not only for her son, but for other adults who are living with a disability. She believed that starting the social group can help them create friendships and give families a chance to relate to one another.
You know, and I hear it from the parents as a testimonial that their son or their daughter is out in the community with genuine friendships. Everybody that's a human being needs to know they belong somewhere.
After her son graduated high school, Flermon noticed something was wrong. The community he once had was no longer there. This became the start of something greater.
Started a long time ago because my son Adam just had come out of high school. And my friend and I noticed that our kids were becoming depressed because they were no longer connected to community. They were home a lot and only just with their parents or with a few people. So my friend and I said, let's form a play group for our kids. And let's come together because her and I were friends anyway. So we started connecting with other parents from Special Olympics, and we asked them, "Day, do you want to come out with us and we'll play games with our kids? After that, maybe some of you guys would like to go out and eat with us." And that's how the ball rolled. And now my son is 40 years old, and it has been a successful community group.
Before she knew it, families started to resonate with her story. And thanks to Circle of Friends, nobody was going through it alone. Flermon described this experience as a journey.
But not just for him, but for others, as I see other people in the same journey. And so that's why it was very easy for me to join with my friend, join with other people. I embraced the journey of not being like the rest of the world was passing me by.
After many years, they are still going strong, meeting up once a week, having annual events, and even partnering up with the city of Yuma. But that doesn't stop there. Friends within the social group are now a part of each other's lives.
What has happened, what has developed, is that now we go to each other's birthday parties. We go to their house to swim. We go, you know, through. We go to the movies with genuine friends. And our children and are seeing the value of it. The parents see the value of it. It brings the participant out of depression because they know they have genuine friends and they have a community to go to.
With what began with a mother looking for a way to make the world brighter for her son has now evolved into a space where a piece of our community has been changed for the better. From the KAWC Student Newsroom, I'm Chloe Michael.
KAWC's The Hotspot is produced by KAWC Student Newsroom at KAWC Colorado River Public Media.
Check us out on Instagram, Blue Sky, and Facebook at Hotspot KAWC.
This show is available as a podcast or online at kawc.org under the Shows tab.
The KAWC Student Newsroom is supported by our listeners. and by the Local News Initiative at the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona and the Scripps Howard Fund.
Our theme music is Election Time by Kiarton Abel. The Flash Interview's music is Funkmeister by Theo JT. Both are available at freesound.org.
I'm Maya Manry.
I'm Chloe Michael.
Bringing the heat to Yuma and La Paz, it's
The Hot Spot.